Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham and we are high-fiving in association with Flowers Unlimited. Yes, that's right, our backs-to-the-wall victory at St James's Park on Saturday saw us rise to fifth in the table after Danny Welbeck's solitary goal saw us come home with all the points. That was Danny's fifth goal of the season, which is the same as the entire Crystal Palace team have managed all season. Concerned then, as the former England international was stretched off in Tyneside, but the prognosis is that the injury may not be as bad as feared and he could be back in action against bottom of the table Wolves on Saturday. And then on Wednesday, we face Liverpool for the first time in the week in the League Cup before we face him again at Anfield next weekend. In other news, over 8,000 people were at the Amex last Saturday as our women's team drew with Man United, thanks to a bullet header from Nikita Paris, which put the She-Girls fourth going into the international break. Joining me today as we look back on all of that and a lot more is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the star of the Treason Show, darling. It's Mr. Mark Brailsford, and we also welcome back Justin Brentnell. I haven't got anything funny for you, Justin, sorry.
I think just the mere fact that he is with us and he's kindly joined us and the wisdom that he can impart to us is plenty.
I know. It's almost as if we're looking at him through the fog on a Tyne, actually.
But yeah, we'll show this. When we show the video, Justin does look like he's doing his podcast from a sauna.
It does.
What's team room?
Mark, I know how this is going to go. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you.
And, no, you're not. Yes.
Well, I've got over the lurgy. Everyone's got the lurgy these days. I just got, you know, got with the trend and the program, and I've got over it mostly.
So and there's me thinking you were a leader rather than a follower.
Yeah. Well, he has had a busy week treasoning.
Yes, I have. And we've had some incredible shows this year. And we sold out in Lewis, we sold out at Rope Tech and Shoreham. We were full in the Ironworks in Brighton. And it's almost as if there's something going on in the news these days.
I was going to touch on this later, actually. But I might as well ask you now while we've got it, because I was doing some research. Yes, I do research people. And you've got a show coming up at Salt Dean Lido.
We have, yes, we have. The ballroom up there has reopened and they've rebuilt it beautifully. It's absolutely stunning up there. So, yes, we are now going to be doing Salt Dean Lido in between Christmas and New Year.
Hang on, when you say Salt Dean, are you talking Salt Dean Lido or are you talking in the old Butlins?
I don't think it was a Butlins, was it? Was it?
I think it was.
One up on Longridge Avenue, yeah?
Oh, well, maybe it was. I don't know if it was a Butlins, but it's been restored as most people might.
Right, so isn't it a case that the Lido's the swimming pool? And I'm thinking, yes, you could do that. And so you got I assume that actually, I mean, for one, it's a fantastic, if it's the building I'm thinking of, it's a fantastic Art Deco architecture. Yeah, it is that building. Yeah. I mean, I always refer to it as, and I think you're treading familiar boards there because Jimmy Tarbuck trod the boards there as well, about 60 odd years ago.
There you go. I didn't know that.
You'll have to get yourself a red coat, Mark.
Yes.
God, no.
That would be quite funny. In fact, Jimmy Tarbuck did actually turn out for the Albion reserves while he was a red coat at the Salt Dean Butlins.
Good on him.
That is good knowledge. Good knowledge. And I'm sure, actually, I did know that because you've done it in a quiz once and everyone got very angry with you, Al.
Well, listen, most of the questions and quizzes I do, people get angry at. So even if they get the answer right.
Okay, well, moving swiftly on, we're eight games into the season, boys and girls, and we see ourselves sitting fifth in the table, and let's hope we can continue this excellent form. But for you, how has the Hertzler era started, Mark?
I'm thrilled to bits, and I always thought it was something special, because after being out in Germany during the Euros, one of the things we used to bump into some St. Pauli fans while we were out there, and they were gutted that he'd gone, and they said, oh, no, he's going to be special, this guy, you're going to enjoy this. And it's proven to be the case. I think he's thrilling and interesting, and He's not predictable, which is another part of that lovely turnaround at Newcastle, which is incredible, which I'm sure we'll go on to. And he bucked the trend of, oh, actually, he changed his plan and won the game. Amazing. So I think he's brilliant. I love it. I don't know if you know this, but apparently he's the youngest manager in the Premier League.
I've never heard that. No one's ever mentioned that.
You never hear that.
That's one for your quiz, Alan.
Thanks, mate. Yeah. God, do you reckon people would get angry about, with me with that one as well?
I think so.
Maybe surprised to hear it. I mean, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Justin, I mean, we've been mentioning it on the show for most of the season, and there has been a lot of concerns about the high line. But coming out of this game at Newcastle, we've seen that, as Mark said, there was another plan, and it was a lot more pragmatic. And it looks like it could be a horses for courses this season.
Certainly, and it puts me in mind of Potter, because he was always fond of pulling out a new formation out the hat. It's very interesting. I feel for poor Eddie Howe, who would have spent the week drilling the team on how to cope with Matoma on the wing, Minty on the other side, various tactics about beating that high line, and neither of those three things materialised, certainly in the first half of the match.
Justin, I think that's a first on this show. In 17 years of doing the show, that's the first time anybody's felt sorry for Eddie Howe.
Yeah, let's not make it a habit, please. Now, this is the thing about Hertzler, that certainly the club would have recognised when they were first talking to him. Now, the whole thing is that everyone seemed to just sort of foist this high line thing upon him. And yeah, it's what he wanted to start with. And of course, then you realise that the defensive line is creaking, and you know, you've seen yogurt turn quicker. But the point is that it's not as though he's arrogantly stuck to hit those particular guns. And no manager is ever, ever, ever going to be successful to the extent that we are becoming by just only playing one way. It's an accusation that so many Brighton fans say, oh, we were at such and such a match. And even Graham Potter, he's got no plan B, C or D. And you think, actually, he'll often have a B, C and D during the same game. It's so refreshing to see that where people are expecting a high line, and if that happens to be opposition and we don't do it, then great. But where people are expecting a high line, let's put it this way, it didn't happen against Spurs. They learned their lesson a little bit. You know, we came undone against Chelsea. They did a number on us. I mean, it's quite embarrassing to lose to Chelsea in the first place, but they did a number on us. Okay, lesson learned. The big problem would have been is if we repeat and repeat and repeat the same mistake.
Yeah, but Mark, this is the thing, actually, because in the press conference after the Chelsea game, Fabian was saying, after getting repeatedly caught out by the simple balls over the top, that he would sit down and have a chat with the players because they clearly weren't overly comfortable with it all the time. And it, you know, you've got to have the right personnel to play that sort of style, which is why we're saying so. When we did revert to this on Saturday, all of a sudden you're seeing players a lot more comfortable, maybe.
Well, I heard a rumor. I don't know if this is true. Then you'd know more. Apparently, there was some getting together with the players and trying to say, well, what could we do differently? And I guess the senior players having that input was a positive bit, and that's encouraging about him as a coach. That even he's not insecure about being younger than him, he will listen to ideas, and he's big enough and intelligent enough to absorb some input from the senior players there, and particularly the defenders, maybe. And I thought, that is a great coach. I was impressed. If that's true, I don't know if that's true. But
well, I could well believe it of the likes of Potter, who's been around for a long time. I could well believe it of the likes of De Zerbi, who's been around for a long time. And in fact, I can't believe that even the likes of Guardiola wouldn't listen to his top players and say, we're struggling with this, can you help us?
I find it difficult to believe that De Zerbi would be like that. I got the impression he was like, I'm doing it my way. I'm not so sure how receptive he would have been.
Yeah, but with De Zerbi, I mean, what you have to realise is if the players can see that it's actually working, and under De Zerbi initially, certainly, they could see that the way they were being drilled was getting them results, and players loved getting good results. They loved getting their bonuses. It's... you know, if it wasn't working, I'm sure that the personnel we had in the squad at the time, particularly a certain Mr. Lallana would have told him exactly where to go if it wasn't working.
Point. Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? Without Lallana in that room, and I don't know how much senior players off the pitch have an input. So, for example, James Milner has been talked about as being quite influential in the dressing room. So you wonder how much of this is a collegiate effort. And I'm impressed by that, that a leader of the team, he's not insecure about his position. He's very much leading with people on board as opposed to telling everyone what he wants.
Well, wasn't it the case that we heard about at halftime against Spurs when Milner, Steele and Van Hecker, none of whom played, had their input?
Yeah,
I mean, it makes it sound very democratic, which is not necessarily how a football team should be run. But like you say, if it's all part of a collective, then yeah, absolutely. And the point is that the job was done.
It worked. Sorry to interrupt, but it's actually something I've recognised as a very big, powerful positive for directing shows. When I direct a show, whether it be Shakespeare or Trine show or any other show, one of the things I've resisted, because as an actor who then becomes a director and does both, this is how I came to it. I don't like directors who impose and who just go my way or the highway. And they're insecure because if they're questioned, they don't understand what they're doing. Their methodology is not clear. Their motivational abilities are questionable. And I recognise it when I see it in managers who are secure in how they see the game, how they see their way of handling people. In the Treason Show, for example, I include the performers' views. I let them affect the material choices. I include how they want to structure the show as well. And I find that strengthens the team performance. And I think that also applies when it comes to other areas like sport, particularly cricket and particularly football. So I'm particularly thrilled and very, very interested in how Hertzler's doing this, because that is something I admire and I think is brilliant and I think bodes very well.
Invite him along to your rehearsals then.
Yeah, I'm not too sure he'd understand the rhetorical rule of three of a Trump impression. but maybe you know, scoring a goal is not dissimilar to actually getting a laugh. It's that feeling, you know.
Well, absolutely. You're looking to achieve something, whether it's a response from the audience of shock, of sympathy, of tears, or like you say, of a laugh. I mean, obviously, the ultimate end goal in football is to score the goal, but also you do get a response when someone does a blinding bit of skill or puts in a hefty tackle.
Yeah, and it's creative. It is a creative process. And he's a creative coach by the sound of it. And that is the modern way. And if you look at the dinosaurs of the yesteryear times of when managers were, you know, the dictators, the Cloughs, the even was more recently, as you look at you know, the kind of Ferguson type. That's a very long gone era now, because the creativity, intelligence led, emotional intelligence led, Potter particularly, which I think you mentioned, Justin, the way that coaching is going now. And players are, you know, you can't talk to players in the same way you used to. No. And I think that progressive modern way is why Brighton are going to be at the forefront and the top end of it all, because they are more progressive.
Well, with that in mind, And as someone who follows England around, what do you reckon to the new gaffer?
I think it's a great appointment. I mean, the fact that everyone's going, well, some people are saying, oh, well, it's a German. He's won things. This is a guy who's actually won things. It's brilliant. Yeah. It's the best appointment you could imagine. I think it's brilliant. And also probably bring a few of those England egos into line as well.
I was about to say, you're not necessarily one who, well, evidently, I think from your answer, you're not one of those who insists that the national coach should be of that nationality.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nonsense, isn't it? Whether it's he's German or not. I think, I mean, at least he'll have no problem singing the national anthem because the Germans are royals. So, you know, no problem
there.
One
wonders if he is from Saxe Coburg Gotha.
Well, exactly. Probably related somewhere down the line. Sure. But, you know,
we all are, mate. All the way back to Charlemagne. We all are.
But exactly. It's nonsense, really. And I think the trick is it proves the pudding, isn't it, of winning games.
Yes.
And if we win games and the team suddenly coheres and everyone goes, oh, OK, this is all right. I like this. I think it's great. I think good on him. And I think, you know, it was never my favourite coach because I never liked Chelsea. But he got a result. But he won the Champions League in that season after taking over halfway through a season, if I remember. And, you know, that is what England need now. Someone to come in, sort it out, set a plan and say, this is how you're going to play, and progressive and modern.
Well, let's put it this way. You don't insist that your Bryant manager is from Sussex, do you? If you're going to be that parochial about it, you don't insist that you're... You know, a Bryant manager has to come from Sussex.
So. And the Bryant managers are German, so all good for me. I'm very happy. Still,
And speaking of winning games, that's exactly what we did on Saturday. Justin, it was very much a case of riding our luck. I mean, obviously, despite the tactical changes, if Newcastle had their shooting boots on, they could have been home and host.
Yeah, I think if instead of Anthony Gordon, they were playing the Cole Palmer from our match with Chelsea, we'd be having a very different conversation. And Isak as well was guilty of missing an absolute peach of a chance. But yeah, you've got to be in there. You've got to be up for it and up for the fight, trying to defend. And we didn't give up. And we changed as well through that match. There was changes in formation, players. And we learnt our lesson from the first half, certainly.
Now, the goal was scored by a guy which everyone who listens to this show knows.
He's your favourite, isn't he?
I love him. I've said it before, and I say again, he's a Rolls Royce of a footballer. And I saw that particularly when he was like playing for us during lockdown. And you know, everyone's saying strikers are judged by the goals they score. And Danny's never really been particularly prolific. I was going through his stats and he's never scored more than 12 in a season, which is quite surprising, really. But I mean, he's played more games for Brighton than he has for anybody else. He scored more goals for Brighton than he has for anybody else. And he's actually, under Hertzler, he seems to be like scoring a lot more regularly. So obviously, this was a brilliant goal that he scored. I mean, it was that ball from Dunk, the 1-2 with Jorginho, and that little poked finish.
It was a classic centre forwards goal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, big crash bang wallop. Alan Shearer likened him to fine wine this week, you know, getting better with age. Justin, can you see Danny Welbeck finishing his career here?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, it's an aged whiskey. The older he gets, the better he gets, and the fitter he gets. Yeah, I was going to say he seems to be playing more matches. The thing that impresses me though, that since we signed him, it quickly became apparent to me that he had the best all round game of any Brighton striker I've ever seen. And this isn't the fox in the box thing. This is strength, this is power, this is pace, this is passing, this is just a footballing brain as well. He had all that. He seems to have hit the jackpot in converting the chances now. And to be honest, at the moment, he's looking pretty unstoppable, which is helpful with João Pedro in the sick bay.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, he has missed chances as well. I mean, he missed that absolute sitter against Spurs a couple of week or so ago. And you could see how visibly angry he was at the time. And and obviously, he did score the winner in that game.
My favourite Danny Welbeck moment, I'm going to throw Mark in with this, because it was a game I missed. It was the back heel for Pedro's goal against Palace. That was a bit sumptuous, wasn't it?
Mainly because it was against Palace. He doesn't enjoy those. Yeah, his awareness, his all-round game, it's like they say, strikers obviously mature, they get more aware, they've got more time in their brain, they may slow down, but Welbeck didn't always rely on pace when he was younger anyway, but he's become, you know, like you said, Justin, I think you said it, or somebody said it, the fine wine, the aged whiskey is lovely. Good description. And I think that is the key. And Hertzler, again, it shows you the adaptability and the way the coaching is actually helping Welbeck. I think he's thriving under Fabian Hertzler because of the attention that Hertzler's paying to it. And of course, that through ball by Beck and Dunk, if we've talked about Germans and Beckenbauer, I also referred to as Beck and Dunk or Dunkenbauer.
Dunkenbauer.
You know? I mean, every now and again, he's got that in him, isn't he? And he puts through ball beautifully. And obviously, Ruta as well put a lovely little pass through. So all those lovely things that must have been in the coaching as well are helping Danny thrive.
Yeah.
There's now there's a point now, Justin. The name that Mark's just mentioned there, the slow but gradual rise of Jorginho Rutter. Do you think we've still yet to see the best of him?
Yes, but the current incarnation of him is very good indeed. I think he suffered with a he kind of came with a tag, which is you kind of look, oh, it's 40 million striker, and I think a lot of people kind of got that in their heads, striker. I actually believe, bearing in mind the evidence for this is his heat map against Newcastle that was kind of a right winger.
Right.
Or a right wing back, actually. He was helping Veltman an awful lot. His tackling and interceptions stats, I think, were the highest in the team, and probably the ground he covered as well. He's in Hertzler's toolbox alongside Hinchewood and Cadioglu as well, I think, as a player that can fit into a lot of different
Yeah.
positions. But I think now the fan base gets who he is. He's going to be loved and he's going to be adored.
I mean, when he came, I was under the impression that he was actually going to be the Pascal Gross replacement, because his role predominantly in the Leeds side was a chance creator. He had more assists than anybody else, and from what I've seen from him on the pitch, I mean, for me, it was a little bit of a slow burner. But he's settling into the team, the environment, and that happens with players. It's gonna happen with all
Absolutely,
the
yeah.
players we signed, and
Yeah.
we signed a lot.
Well, his first appearance was that cameo in the win over Manchester United. And it was only about sort of 8, 10 minutes, but it was enough to have it was him and I think someone else came on. It was enough to have turned the game, and as much
Dingra.
as it was petering out to 1-1 draw, they'd had it, they'd had a couple of they had a goal that was disallowed and what have you, and it just reinvigorated the midfield. And I think we might have even still had Gilmore then at the same time, at
Yeah,
that
we did,
time.
yeah.
Yeah, it reinvigorated everything. You could see that, okay, all right, it's 10 minutes. You can't judge necessarily, but you're not talking about a complete donkey. And yeah, he, like you say, he slipped up a couple of times in subsequent matches, but he is getting better. His goal against Spurs was interesting. Justin uses the word striker. It was a real striker's goal, bit of strength, but I'm not going to sound like Hansen here. Strength, pace, power, and beautifully put away. I'm actually kind of excited by him, but also I've probably got to temper it a little bit. But I think that one of the reasons that Leeds fans loved him was his attitude on and off the pitch. Although now some of them are getting salty. I mean, some are saying, yeah, he's a great player, look after him, et cetera, and there's some saying, yeah, he tends to go missing in the big games. And I'm thinking, well, hang on, he scored the second goal and created the winner against Spurs. So that's not my idea of going missing in the big games, is it now?
No, but I mean, this is what I was saying though, because I mean, like I said, if we think it, I'm not going to draw direct comparisons with Pascal Gross because he's a completely different player. But he's chasing after all the lost causes. He's everywhere on the pitch, he's closing down. He's actually like more of a dogged midfielder at times than a silky forward player. He,
Yeah,
he
he's
he's
not
all
Gross,
over the
believe
pitch.
me. He's not Pascal Gross. The one who I thought was going to be the replacement was O'Reilly, and we
Still might
yet,
be.
and he still might be. What's clear is that we don't have a Gross replacement, and I think it's probably not even necessarily worth saying, okay, we've got a. I mean, I know I've done it, in as much as we know that Belieber is the kind of the upgrade on Bissouma and Caicedo.
It's interesting that just to bring you up on the point there, if I may, is the thing about what everyone's talking about. Obviously, Gross, we loved, and I loved Gross. He was a great player for us. And now the team is evolving. And it's not just the way coaching's evolving and other teams evolve. Generally, football is evolving to the point where your Jorginho Rutters and midfield players, stroke forwards, are they strikers, are they wingers? They're both or not, either of them really now, because the modern progressive way of playing the game seems to be changing to the point where when they sign them, they can't be boxed so easily. You can't actually say, oh, that's the striker, that's the midfield, that's the 10. It's now become a lot more fluid and adaptable. And I think that's where again, Hertzler's progression of coaching and understanding of it, his idea of it has progressed as well and then evolved in the team. And I think all these signings that we're seeing, when O'Reilly eventually comes back, I'm looking forward to seeing him, because that was awful. That horrible Crawley game.
It was assault,
that
wasn't it?
Thug. It was. He should have been jailed for it. It was horrendous.
Yeah.
And bless him, O'Reilly, to handle it so well. But you bring him in, it's going to be another dimension. And the multi-layered nature now of the type of skills these players have means it's a more enriched, varied set of tools for a coach to play with, which means the adaptability of the coach is crucial. Yeah. And I think that is, again, going back to what Hurst has been like, I think he is using the players very well, and the algorithms clearly identifying the skill sets brilliantly.
The other thing about that is that Potter and De Zerbi used it to a certain extent. So now that Hertzel is in, it's not a massive gear crunch that he's doing what he's doing. And if it was, I suspect that actually the players might be taking longer than they would to adapt. That's why we're in fifth rather than, you know, because when Graham Potter came in, yeah, you could see it was an upgrade on Chris Hughton, who was, let's face it, far too negative. Although we then had some bizarre stats and stories about only winning one home game a year and what have you, and still being relegation candidates, and yet we could still see something in Potter, and we stood by him, and eventually he delivered. It took a while, and that's kind of, see, I see at the moment, I see Potter, De Zerbi and Hertzler as the trip, a kind of a trilogy of the same, want of a better term, gestalt entity, a kind of a collective person. Each with their sort of very slight ideas, but my point being is that Potter was the start of something that's got us to where we are now. So if Hertzler had come in, and this is where Lewis Dunk said when De Zerbi first came in, it was such a gear crunch, and I'm thinking, well, there's actually so many aspects of De Zerbi's game that Potter had been doing, and so by the time that it only took about three or four games for it to settle in, and it was that 4-1 win against Chelsea. After that, we were flying, and Hertzler's just the sort of, is he an upgrade or is he just a kind of a mild tweak? For me, I don't think the football is quite as exciting, but then it's, I think what Hertzler has done is taken away a lot, not all, but a lot of the kamikaze aspects of it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the term that Justin used earlier with, like, you used the word Hertzler's toolbox.
Yeah.
And when everybody is fit, and I have no idea what the team is going to look like, because there is a lot of talented players that aren't even going to make the bench in this. I mean, you know, we were talking about Graham Potter there and going to De Zerbi. We've had the evolution of the team,
yeah.
But the players that we've been bringing in are ones that are more tactically aware. They're willing to take on the instruction. And I think we're seeing that at Chelsea, that I don't think, Potter couldn't manage the egos there, but here there are no egos. I mean, we're seeing the team spirit that we have at this club, and everyone is pulling together in the same way. But it's just a case of the players have to be intelligent, and they're going to have to be patient, because they're not always going to play. But they know if they're not going to be doing it in training and going along with, like, Hertzler's methods, they're not going to get into the match day squad at the moment.
And this is where I'm going to actually, maybe with a bit of guess, obviously not knowing, I'm not part of the dressing room, this is where I like to then lord up and praise the likes of Lewis Dunk, probably previously Adam Lallana, certainly PVC, Pascal Gross, those senior players who, when the new person comes in, basically got everyone else to say, right, shut up and listen. Where at Chelsea, it was like, who the bleep are you? And it's that kind of attitude. And it's something that Mark said early on in the show, that said, you know, Hertzler's come in, it's very exciting. And the reason, one of the main reasons, I mean, there are myriad, but one of the main reasons is that he's got a squad of players who are prepared to be these kind of tactical sponges, knowledge-wise, and then put it into action. The only ever sort of downfall would be is whether a given player has the technical ability or the imaginational flair to actually be able to put Hertzler's tactics onto the pitch. But at least they are prepared collectively to listen to what he is going to say. And if it, let's say, and as Mark said, if there's an issue about it, then they'll discuss it between them and iron out any problems. Yeah, Chelsea was a problem, so that you iron it out.
But go on,
well,
Justin.
Justin. I think the contrast with Chelsea is fascinating because they had their cull of all their senior players, so they don't have what we have, a group of 30-year-olds, Steele, Milner. They got rid of them because they were paying them too much. So they are mostly under 24s playing there, and I think their house isn't built on solid ground. And I think when they have challenges of injuries, some results not going their way, I think they're going to crumble, and I'm going to be incredibly happy to see it.
I don't think it's going to happen, though. I don't think it's going to happen. I hate to say it, but they're actually looking a lot more solid than they were.
They're still below us in the table, mate.
Oh, yeah, so are Palace.
Well, actually, so is everyone apart from some distance.
Well, there was a lot of other stuff to like in the game. I mean, obviously, Danny getting his goal. He's now two goals off being our all-time Premier League goal scorer. I know, Al, that is the football existed before the Premier League. I know, but how far? So he's on 28 now. How far is he off Michael Robinson? That's what we know. That's the question.
He's 9 goals off Michael Robinson in the top division. Which, right, the way he's going, he'll hit by Christmas
if he's fit.
If he's fit, yeah.
Hang on. Right, this is where we're getting back to the whole thing of that bloke's just getting fitter and stronger. It's like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a Marvel comic character who, you know. Listen, his back basically exploded on Saturday, and he still gets up and flies his own plane home.
In his kit. He must have stunk.
Yeah. Welbeck Airlines, and off he goes.
But we also had a nice...
Hang on. Adi, can I just say that, let's put it this way, the Danny Welbeck of 3 years ago, if he'd have gone down with that back problem, you're looking at something horrific with him. You know, it was always something. That's not to say that, you know, he was a sick note. Far from it. It was always the fact that, you know, the fella was built with paper mache. I don't know what the club have done to him, but he's bigger. I think he's actually faster. He's more intelligent. And something else that we haven't really talked about too much is his contribution off the pitch. I think is that the Hertzler allows him, I think, gives him the confidence. I'm guessing, but I think it gives him confidence to go out and express himself. And bloody hell, is he doing that?
Yeah, I'm here for it. Love it. Absolutely love him. But I mean, let's face it. I mean, the game itself, we did get out of jail a little bit. I mean, we've all had days like Newcastle have where the ball just won't go in.
Game at home for us, for instance.
Absolutely, and you know, I've been slightly critical of Bart over the last few weeks because he's been not quite on top form, and obviously as a goalkeeper, if you have a bad game, it's exaggerated, isn't it? But against Newcastle, what a masterclass that was!
Well, pick a perfect goalkeeper, and I'll show you a liar.
Give that some thought.
I mean, you remember last season, Mark? We had the sort of like the interchangeable thing of Jason and Bart. I mean, we now have Bart. Do you think that De Zerbi was trying to be diplomatic? Do you think he genuinely couldn't decide, or do you think it was a little bit foolhardy? Where are you on that whole thing from last year?
I think Steele's fantastic, lovely fella as well, and is essential component. His nature of being a central component of that dressing room, I'm sure, is the value. But also, I'm sure De Zerbi did value the distribution he has, whereas Verbruggen is slowly getting there with that. And he's still a great keeper, Verbruggen, and still, I think, never let us down and did produce some great saves. But I think of the two keepers, it's right. You have to have one keeper as your main keeper. And I'm glad they've settled that down now. And it's a shame for Jason Steele, but I mean, what a great number two to have. And also from a distribution point of view, I think that hopefully that answers your question. I think that is why Verbruggen is in number one now. Mm. But again, remember how young he is. And goalkeepers, as we know, don't mature till a bit later. And he's good. He's solid. And look at they play him in internationals all the time. He's their number one. He's now beginning to build a bit more of a solidity with the defence in front of him. And they're understanding more and more now about his game. And the way he read some of those angles and tipped some of those saves over the ones he tipped around the post were fantastic. And you know, the saves with his feet. And he's now getting there to become more consistent. And I think that's all it was. And you need a run in the team. I don't think you can keep swapping your keepers over. I didn't like that when De Zerbi did it, but I could see why he did it.
And he's a target for Real Madrid, apparently.
What, Steele or Verbruggen?
Oh, yeah, Steele.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, no, irrespective of the fact that obviously Steele is now dropped down to the second choice goalkeeper again, he's still in a much better place than he was than when he was at Sunderland.
Yeah. Gotcha. And I dare say
and
I he'll
think
be.
He know, and the point is, I think he knows and appreciates that. And he'll be part of that. Or externally, he'll be part of that goalkeepers union that said, you know, good luck to him. And internally, he'll be sort of like, well, I want that gig. But, you know, let's face it, he had a horrible time at Sunderland. And I think there's still a lot of Sunderland fans that still are absolutely astonished that he ended up resurrecting himself the way he did down here.
Shows how good he is, classy.
Absolutely.
He is.
And he'll probably get a game on Wednesday as well.
Exactly. I was just going to say, he'll play the cup games. And the way Hertz approaches the cup games, he's serious about those. I think we could have a nice little run going somewhere in one of the cups. And I think still play
those. Well, let's hope our run in the League Cup carries on after next Wednesday.
Not sure about the League Cup, but maybe the FA Cup.
Wait for that as well, yeah.
It's a cup.
Until we get drawn against Man City in the third round. Yeah, great. Yeah.
We're already in the third round, so that's not going to happen.
1983, 4-1 on the way to Wembley, we beat them.
And I still have the scar across the bridge of my nose from that game where I was leaning back against the fence and then turned around. You remember the fence in front of the North Stand?
Mm-hmm. You know, was that John Bond headbutting you that day, was it?
Well, actually, it wasn't that far off it. I leaned my nose against the fence and I didn't see the ball coming and it went whack straight onto me and the fence dug into my nose.
Ow.
Yeah, those fences were vicious back then. Oh. Absolutely vicious.
And utterly pointless.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on smart speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. We are brought to you in association with the brilliant Flowers Unlimited. And Al, where can you get your flowers from?
Well, you can either go grave robbing, or you can go to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, where you will find all your floral requirements. Not just hatch, match and dispatch. There are anything you want flowers for, even if you're just fancy planting some in your garden. Go and see Dave Costa's team. If you're an Albion season ticket holder, you automatically get 20% off. That's a case of doing that on the phone or going and visit them in person. Mm-hmm. Christmas is coming, so do listen out onto your favourite Albion-related podcast, because we have some goodies to give away from Flowers Unlimited in the run-up to Christmas. But yeah, if you wish to get your flowers for whatever occasion, go to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And when you do buy your flowers there, just let them know you're an Albion season ticket holder and you'll get a 20% discount.
You know, if it's your mum's birthday, you know, get her some flowers and get some bubbles as well. They do booze, they do chocolates, they do cuddly toys, they do all sorts of stuff.
And they're going to be doing all sorts of Christmas decorations, so watch this space.
Good reef.
No, Mark.
Taxi for Packham.
Yeah.
Right. moving swiftly on and to the Amex, actually. Last Saturday, Al, you were there for the women's game against United. A massive crowd of 8,369, which is, I believe, more than ever got into with Dean.
probably is the case. Yes, women's football, even though it's been sort of around in Brighton for a long time, it is a slow burner. And 8,300, let's face it, the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal are getting a lot more. Now, obviously, they're throwing money at these sorts of things, but when they can fill the Emirates, then you realise how far we have to go. However, it's another step along the way. What's clear is that the Brighton and Hove Albion women's team is a step up, a massive step up from what's gone before. Clearly, the tactics are working better. Clearly, we have more talent there. And in the likes of Nikita Paris and Fran Kirby, when I first saw Fran Kirby stepping out for the Albion against Everton at Crawley about 6 weeks ago, you could clearly see she was a cut above. We won 4-0 and Everton were lucky to get nil. We then got another 4 against Aston Villa in the next home match. So, yeah, it was very exciting. The sun was shining. And it was only a tenner to get in. We were useless, having said that, in the first half hour. Man United were all over us. And do you know what? Sometimes, and there's a kind of a parallel with the men's side here. I don't know if those that have noticed it, that how relatively sloppy we can be in the first half usually of our men's senior matches, and then Hertzler gets them in, says what he needs to say, and then off they go, and we're really, really good in the second half. This seems exactly to be what happened for the women's game. We were absolutely brilliant in the second half. We got the equaliser. Who doesn't love a Keith Houchin, Andy Gray style diving bullet header for an equaliser from Nikita Paris? Absolutely brilliant. It would be just nice to think that if this kind of form continues, that we can actually get those upgrade the bigger crowds. Because the interesting point is the club has said that it wants to build a specific stadium for the women, which is great, of a capacity of sort of 10,000 to 11,000. The reason being is that the Amex is kind of a break-even figure. So every time they use the Amex and they don't get 10,000, there's a loss to the club. So it would be nice to think that if it was like Arsenal, where we could basically fill the ground, there wouldn't be almost, it's bizarrely, there wouldn't be a need for that second ground. Although you could then have the under-21s there, 10-0 against Palace, nice. or even 3-0 against Leipzig, that was even better. I did actually have, sorry, let me just digress a little bit. I did actually have the moment to see Gary Dicker just before the women's game. And, you know, he was there, I think it was probably his daughter that was with him. I said about, well done with the 10-0. How did you manage to sort of like keep yourself from being so excited? Is it, you know, and you've met obviously Gary Dicker, AD.
Oh yes, many times.
Can you imagine Gary Dicker getting very excited?
When he scored that goal with Dean, what that absolute scream, I can't remember who it was against now.
What, the volley?
Yeah. He went full on Muppet Frenzy animal drum solo. Crazy.
That's about it, though, isn't it? That's what it takes. Even beating Palace 10-0, you know. But the lovely thing about it is that the number of times that the under-21s are playing and it's nil, and these are the things that I actually think, you know, make us so interesting. It's something I tweeted yesterday. The men's senior team, the women's senior team, the under-21s and the under-18s. Well, certainly the first three I mentioned there, they're all in the top five of their respective divisions. The under-18s are top of their division. At the moment, it's not a bad time to be an Albion fan, especially if you also support the sort of like the more minor sides. So yeah, I'm liking to think that the women's team is finally on the, you know, on the road to bigger and better things. We've started off like with the men's team with, you know, maintaining a start that a lot of people wouldn't have said we were necessarily going to have. And it's so much more exciting for it, to the point that, you know, we've already played Manchester City. They beat us 1-0, and even then that was them scraping over the line. It's an exciting time to go and see the women. If you do get an opportunity to do so, check your call in at the door and go and give the women a cheer.
I think the recruitment of this summer, though, helps. I mean, obviously, we there's been a lot of like very, very good players, particularly good players on the world stage that they've recruited over the last couple of years. But this summer, bringing in the likes of Frank Kirby, who people have actually heard of, bringing the likes of like Nikita Paris, who people have actually heard of, there was a genuine excitement about these guys coming here and going to watch them. And, you know,
it's, you know, it's the original bums on seats.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we saw these girls play for England in the Euros and win the Euros and in those games at the Amex. And, you know, these, you know, it's excitement. And, you know, people get into the habit of doing stuff, right?
I think that they also consider this place to be a little bit of a, I don't know what the phrase is. Mark, could you perhaps help us out here? You must have favourite venues, favourite theatres that you've actually performed in. What name would you give to them?
Well, favourite venue, I suppose. But
right,
yeah,
okay. Well,
you know, there's an aesthetically pleasing atmosphere about places that you play well in or perform well in. And I mean, this was surprising. I played in most of the Theatre Royals up and down the country on various tours and shows. And funny enough, my favourite one was Wolverhampton Grand.
So, and why was that? Okay, so this is my point here. Why is that?
Because it was personal to me. It was my first tour date on a very big musical. I joined after a while there. And then I went back to a couple of times with other shows as well. And the friendliness of it, It was a recently refurbished Theatre Royal, and a classic Theatre Royal. It was bigger than Brighton's Theatre Royal. Brighton's Theatre Royal, until recently, was quite run down in the 80s. Although I left the show in Brighton, and I performed at Theatre Royal a number of times, but it's also a bit smaller. So I used to look forward to going back to Wallham's Grand. But up the Bath Theatre Royal, Bury St Edmunds, and big venues up in Liverpool, Manchester, all that, whatever, are great too. But you get an attachment on a personal history. So I guess it's a vibe thing, it's a kind of history thing. I mean, the thing about going back to Withdean, you guys went back there, didn't you? I was wondering why, if they're going to build a stadium for the women's team in Brighton, I think that would help the attendances to be based in Brighton. If the women were there, I wonder if that would work, because Withdean seems right for it, really.
We'll come to that in a minute, because I've got a couple. I would have. I've got a couple of thoughts on that. But the point I'm making here is that you've named a sort of a theatre there. You've named a favourite venue that seems, on the face of it, fairly random. But for you, it's personal. And this is, I think, something the Keys of Paris and Frank Kirby have already said. They were here when England won 8-0 against Norway. They were here when we beat Spain 2-1 in a brilliant, brilliant night at the Amex, and probably one of my top 10 nights at the Amex. So they'd like to think there's kind of something, whatever the word that you want to apply to it, Mark, about coming back to a scene of one of their triumphs.
Absolutely, and you're obviously going to enjoy going back to a very modern, lovely place to be. It's south of England, slightly better weather. And you're also going to be great facilities. The training grounds facilities are fantastic for the women as well, and the stadium's a great stadium to play in. And I think that a lot of them remember that. And of course, you're going to go where the money is, so that's obviously helped.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I can see the women's team is actually sort of the Albion's women's team is finally. I mean, because Tony's thrown in millions, eight-figure sums already for this, and he's received not a great deal back. And I think that the spending spree that we've had on the men's team is not dissimilar that we've had with the women's team. And like you say, AD, the upgrade in personnel is going to have a big effect. And
yeah.
It's actually genuinely. I'm not saying if there's anyone, by the way, who's listening to this segment who doesn't like women's football, that's your issue. I mean, I can't get my head around that.
Well, go back to Arsenal and Chelsea that you just said. Sorry to interrupt, but I think one thing to mention there is you've got to remember that Arsenal ladies, as they were, and Chelsea have historically had women's teams for a long time.
Yes.
And it's a relatively recent phenomenon in Brighton. So give it time, and I think you'll see that, provided they get a stadium in Brighton. I think that's going to be the key to
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this goes back to the point I was making as well about the fact you get into the habit of doing something. And I mean, we said this on the show a couple of weeks ago. When the girls were playing down at Lancing, it was just a short walk along for us. We used to go often. I used to take my daughter with me. And they used to do it really well, and it was growing naturally. And then they had to move because of logistical reasons.
Yeah.
But if 8,000 people going to the Amex to watch them is fantastic. But and a lot of those people have gone, I've had a really nice time, and I might go again, and I'm going to tell my friends or they might bring my daughter or my son.
Absolutely.
It's a completely different atmosphere. And people get into the habit of doing this sort of thing. So
but the point is also it was a genuinely good game.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've watched the Albion and the WSL over the last three seasons, the fare is not that great. Every game I've watched, probably apart from the away game at Palace, where we struggled to trap a bag of cement, every game so far has been really good to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree. I'm excited to watch the next one, but they're international break, so there won't be one for a little bit. Okay, moving on. We don't often talk about the Sussex Senior Cup, really, Al. We had a little evening out to
went to see the
old
really,
girlfriend,
didn't we?
Went
to see the ex, just to see how she's getting on. It was good. The fellow who's the chairman of AFC Vardenians is a bloke who was my old boss. He actually asked us to help sort of plug it. I don't think he needed to. I think it was about 750 turned up.
Yeah.
In the cop at Withdean. No, it was great to see. I mean, it's
the tree from the left.
Yeah. I found it during the interval. Yeah,
followed by a bear. Yeah, it was good to see. It's actually kind of you're in the north stand there. You're looking across to where the seats. Oh, my season ticket for those 12 years was in the south stand, the one where you got absolutely soaked or sunburnt. And even now, looking across there, you think, how on earth was that a decent view? And of course, you remember that the seats are probably about 15, 20 feet above where the bank is. But answering the point that you were going to make, Mark, about possibly having a stadium there for the women, my answer would be, especially if you limit it to 10,000, and let's face it, with Dean at the end was 8,800, so it's not a massive leap. The only thing that the club would have to do, because I think that the footprint size is there, is to relocate the city's athletics. And let's face it, this is a city with a paucity of facilities for sports generally and athletics especially. It's got one athletics track, and that would have to be relocated somewhere, wherever it may. It'd be easier to relocate an athletics track than it would be to try and find a new stadium. The footprint is a lot less, et cetera, et cetera. But if that was the case, then yes, with Dean, I think would be a possibility. As I understand it, the club want to have it as close to Falmer as possible. That's understandable as well. The transport is all in place. But seeing as we know how with Dean has worked, I can't believe there wouldn't be some kind of, and let's face it, surely, is Mr. Cat still alive?
Probably not. I take that point out, but I mean, one thing that well, there's a few things I took away from going back to Withdean was like that. A, it was still cold.
Yes.
There was that whole me and Andy Bass. We actually managed to walk around the pitch whilst the game was going on. We're walking around the track, and
Yeah.
there was where the old South Stand was, they've now got all these like council signs saying no spectating all the way around it, which is basically which is
But
as well.
also the dugouts haven't changed even
Is it
since
still the same
the
dugout?
same ones. Justin, I mean, have you ever had recall to revisit with Dean?
No. Well, that's wrong. I did go back into the sports centre for a game of squash with a chum that ended in a broken ankle. So I haven't
But
been
you
back
or him?
since then. Me, unfortunately, me.
Oh.
So yeah, I steer well clear now.
Yeah.
It's got
Because
nothing but hurt.
well, because one thing that really spoke I noticed about the place was it has changed. They have actually spent a lot of money on it. And
The
there's
sports centre, yeah.
yeah, there's a there and you know, there's a lot of stuff that was going on there, you know. Those aerobics classes that used to be going on when you could watch when the football was rubbish. You
Yeah.
know, they've got much better facilities
For
now.
God's sake, you didn't really say. The weird thing I remember about the aerobics was that was completely, and I remember this especially on September the 11th, 2001, was obviously it was a horrible day. People were kind of in shock. We played at the Southampton in the League Cup, and of course there was a minute's silence, and it was silence rather than anything else. And so while this silence was going on, a beautifully observed silence over in the gym, all you could hear was keep it up, two, three, four, up, two. Oh
Come on,
no.
Joyce. I forgot that. Yeah, it was, wasn't
God, it
it?
was, and I think that happened more than once. I mean, in that sense, that's why I always appreciate. I know it goes against the grain a bit, but I always prefer a minute's applause rather than a minute's
Yeah, I think
silence
you
because one, you do get that. Two, you'll always get some airhead, some moron who feels propensity to shout. And
did. Yeah.
three, appreciating someone is actually quite nice. But yeah, there was a couple of times that happened where you got a minute's silence and the gym just goes crash, bang, wallop.
Okay. Talking about appreciating somebody, Mark. We appreciate you, and like we mentioned, there's a lot of stuff that's going on with treason at the moment. But you have got that was a year that was now booking. You've got that going on at three different venues. One of which we spoke about earlier, which is Saltdean Lido. What are the other two?
Well, we're at Brighton Bass's Ironworks Studios near the station. And if you haven't been there yet, it's a great venue. And so
Well, we
we're
used
at
to have
Ironworks.
reverb there.
Yes. You
Yes,
did.
that's right.
Your first show there was with us.
With you. Yes, it was. It really was, wasn't it? Of course it was. And what a splendid show it was, dear boy.
One of our best, darling. One of our best.
Absolutely marvellous. I think the venue's been great for us, and we sold out nearly all the shows last Christmas, so early booking is strongly advised.
Naturally.
And we're doing a best of edition, as we always do. That was the year that was, is the kind of catch-all review of the year. So we do best of bits from the year's worth of Treason shows and the topical stuff, and review the stories. That it's been a massive year for
Yeah.
you, enjoyably bonkers. So we've had some great stuff in this year. So it's going to be a great show, I think. And then we've got rope tackle on New Year's Eve, which is our traditional thing as well. We might even be
Yeah.
going to Worthing as well. So you
Good,
never
about time.
know.
So
But
obviously,
obviously, it's not the
Mark, you've
pier.
got obviously, Mark, you've got a between then and now, you're going to have a US election coming up. So are you looking forward to hanging up your Trump?
Be
Hang
about
up
time.
parts of him, yeah.
I think I must admit, I go through the hating loving him and loving hating him, if that makes any sense, because he's a monster character. But of course, he's a larger than life character. So to play him on stage is kind of a guilty pleasure because he's so horrible. Because I can't stand him. I really can't. But I mean, oh, monster characters. We lost one recently in Alex Salmond. I used to play him on stage. And I still put him on stage, with a pair of wings on. But it was still, God, dear, those great characters are going in a way. And if you look at the blandness of the current mob, it's actually what's good for the show isn't good for the world, and vice versa, we often say.
Sorry,
But
can I just cut in here?
both.
That can I just ask you, for those who've just jetted in from Mars or are certainly listening, and I know you even include our US and overseas listeners here. We're talking about the Treason Show. We're talking about a show that you do. Just give us the quick 30-second heads up as to what it is and how long it's been going and what you do for it.
Well, 24 years down the line, we've been doing shows more or less monthly or every other month now for 24 years. It's a topical satire sketch show. I think a cross between, for American cousin, Saturday Night Live on stage
But funny.
with more parody songs, and a cross between, if you get the references from Not 9 o'clock News, of a certain vintage Spitting Image, Have I Got News for You style topicality, but with elements of the classic comedies of British television. So we do probably a bit more than they do. We go further than they do. It'd be on the line, to be honest with you, to be a bit more sharp on and a bit more satirical than perhaps the BBC fears to tread, because they're very much controlled now. It's very much a topical based show. Local references, of course, we're massive Albion fans as well. So we often have Albion jokes and Palace's expense as well. It always gets a good laugh. Or someone shouts, "Oh, if they're a Palace fan," which is always funny.
10
Or
nil.
more recently, Chelsea fans. We've enjoyed taking the mick out of them.
Excellent.
That's been quite enjoyable. Yeah,
So
topical satire.
we're just getting to the end of the show here, Mark. So just close it off for us, would you? And just remind us of the dates and how we get hold of the tickets.
So if you go to the website, you can book online on www.treasonshow.co.uk, our website. And that's for links to all the venues we play, including the Brighton shows on the 27th to the 30th of December. We've got Saltie Lido on the 28th of December, and Rope Tackle on New Year's Eve, and possibly, looking out, we're waiting for confirmation, Worthing on the Saturday 21st of December, possibly. So
That
wait
would
to
be good.
see if we go into the comedy rooms there. So we're going to wait on that one. But you can go to the website. We're always on there with the online sales there, and you can get all the links that you need for that.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Mark. And that is all we have time for this week. So thank you very much to Mark Brailsford. Thank you to Justin Brentnell. Thank you to Alan Wears. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. And we'll see you all very soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.